Welcome to the Global Business Women's Pod, hosted by the Greater Houston Women's Chamber of Commerce. I am Susan Dyson and extremely excited to be your podcast host. In my day job, I am proud to be the CEO, president, and founder of the Chamber. Every Thursday at 6 p.m., we will bring you inspiring stories of women who are leading in the advancement of women and girls. We will take you with us to our premier events. You will meet entrepreneurs, executives, and philanthropists who will empower and inspire you to succeed. So please mark your calendars and join us for the Empowering Global Business Women's Pod, Thursday at 6 p.m.
Afternoon again. My name is Shayla White, and I am the executive director of the GHWCC Women's Business Center. We are happy to have you. Welcome to our educational workshop today. We will be talking about 10 steps to building an iconic brand. So today, you will gain knowledge on the steps of making your brand more marketable with Tanika Vital Pringle, who is the founder and chief brand strategist at Brand Rebirth. So Brand Rebirth is a purpose-driven brand consulting, professional development, and brand swag agency. And her metric-centered methods have helped to generate over $100 million in sales for teams in her career and enabled her to successfully develop, manage, and launch billion-dollar valued brands. So everyone here had a desire to learn how to make their own businesses more marketable. So Tanika is here to help. She holds an executive education certificate in brand leadership, strategy management, and performance from Columbia University, the global MBA and brand management team from Thunderbird, the Global School of Management, and a bachelor's in international business of finance from Howard University. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and hand this over to Tanika. Thank you so much, Tanika, for doing this workshop for us today.
My pleasure. I'm excited, ladies, to be with you. Let me make sure that I share my screen properly and I share the correct screen. Okay. Hopefully everyone can see what I am sharing. What do you see? I just want to confirm that.
We can see it. We're ready for you to press play.
Okay, very well. Okay. And throughout our discussion for the next couple of moments, my intent is to make this as interactive as possible. And so there may be a few times where I might ask you to share something in the chat, or I might ask you to speak. So just be prepared. This is not a monologue. I love everything branding, everything purpose-driven. I am a native Houstonian. And thank you, Shayla, for giving me this opportunity to work with women business owners, fempreneurs. All of you are considered to be fempreneurs. If there's something in the chat that I should be aware of, Shayla, if you could just let me know, because I'll be focused more on connecting with everyone, looking more closely into the camera. But so the title of today is How to Build an Iconic Brand, How to Build an Iconic Brand. And I'd like to begin by just stating that there are over 400 million of us around the world, of us, women business owners that classify as entrepreneurs or fempreneurs according to the Global Entrepreneurship Monitor, which was taken in 2018 and 2019. And there's a special report on women's entrepreneurship. And what I'd like to share is that new entrepreneurs or nascent entrepreneurs represent over 252 million. And then established entrepreneurs are characterized as those who've been in business for over 42 months, represent 153 million. If you look at this from a global perspective, Sub-Saharan Africa and Latin America actually account for the highest rates of total entrepreneurial activity. So with 21% being in Sub-Saharan Africa and 17.3% being in Latin America. So we are global. Here in the States, there are over 13 million of us, and we start over 1,400 businesses every day. So if you're starting it and you're, you know, it's a side hustle right now, continue developing it. And then if you've been in the business for many years, like I think with Gayla Gardner and others, continue to help others and continue to mentor others and inspire others. We as women have been the purveyors of entrepreneurial progress for centuries. as you know, and we fought relentlessly to create value and take on financial risk, all in the pursuit of a profit. So I just, well, this is a moment to motivate everyone here to continue to being tenacious, continue to multitask, continue to be passionate about your big idea, which is why you have a business, be passionate about innovation. And when I use the word innovation, I'm just thinking about new ways to create opportunity. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to work for Google. You all have innovation in you. So I just want to encourage everyone to continue moving forward and continue succeeding. So brand, we're here to talk about brand. And so customers who have an emotional connection with a brand have a 3 times higher lifetime value. I'll pause. So in business, many of you are aware, there's something called lifetime value, or just the customer lifetime value. And what this really means is, how long will your customer be your customer? You want your customer to always be your customer, because it costs more to gain a new customer than it does to keep the ones that you have. So that's just basic. So what this statistic is saying, that when customers have an emotional connection with your brand, they actually have a 3 times higher lifetime value. They last longer, and you want that. And also, I like to talk about, someone mentioned social media. So in social media, you have advertising impressions. So basically, it just means that, you know, if you see an ad, if someone places something in your feed, let's say on Facebook or Instagram, it just appears. If your eyes can look at it, if it appears in your view, that is an impression. But the interesting thing is that it takes 5 to 7 impressions. These are the moments of recognition to produce a smidge of brand awareness. So it takes 5 to 7 times for something to scroll in your peripheral view for your customers, for people to actually notice it. But it only takes 10 seconds for someone to form an impression of your brand. So they might be ignoring what you're presenting, but when they look at it, they form an impression in 10 seconds. So what does that tell all of us? And what does it tell you? It means that developing your brand, or in some cases for your established businesses that are on the line, redeveloping your brand in a strategic sense is a very, very prudent exercise. So I'm happy that you are here. Now, I'm not gonna leave you in the dark and just start talking about brand. I'm going to actually share a proper definition of what a brand is. So before jumping into the 10 steps to creating an iconic brand, I'd like to start by establishing what a brand is. And there are many, many false definitions when you Google, so just know that. So from my standpoint, a brand consists of vivid and tangible associations or attributes. And for the purposes of today, we're going to refer to them as attributes, vivid and tangible attributes that exist in one's mind and their heart about a product or service. Basically, it's what people think about what you sell. And all of these things are used to create a magical pull towards your customer. Branding is about pulling. And when I talk about marketing, I'll let you know what role that plays. So this, another way to say this is, how does the product look? How does it smell? How does it feel? How does it perform? These are all the sum total of a brand. Now there's someone called David Ogilvy, and he's considered to be the father of advertising. He defines the brand as the intangible sum of a product's attributes. Its name, its packaging, its price, its history, its reputation, and the way it is advertised. So I just want to establish this, you know, up front, that branding is about the attributes, the intangible attributes. It's about what people can recall. Now, marketing, on the other hand, which people confuse with branding every day, is the performance of, this is a formal definition, by the way, the performance of business activities designed to plan, promote, direct the flow of what you sell to your consumers for a profit. So to contrast this, branding is about pulling, using attributes, connecting with emotions. Marketing is about pushing content, pushing the messages out. Branding is pulling, marketing is pushing. You need both. And so I want you to know that. And from a historical standpoint, branding actually started in Africa. I want to share this, particularly in Egypt. Ancient Egypt businessmen and those from Rome eventually had practices where they used symbols and pictures on walls to market goods. And ancient Egyptians began branding livestock to symbolize ownership and engraving symbols on the pyramids, the Egyptian pyramids, way back 3000 to 1000 BC. So this practice of using engraved symbols on products was actually used by artisans, not only in Egypt, but in China and India, Greece and Rome. And so in the 1800s into the 1950s, branding was used to convey quality and earn trust. And this is when, if you remember, the manufacturing process was, you know, the Industrial Revolution, the manufacturing process came about. And the branding was used to build familiarity among consumers. And actually in 1975, there was something called the Trademarks Registration Act. And this is where it became a formal kind of thing to get logos and names. And then in the 1950s and 60s, emotional messages were used. Companies started creating commercials. And then consumers became more what you call brand conscious in the 1970s and the 80s. And companies really started using brands to pull people in. And then with the arrival of different demographics like millennials, tweens, Generation Z, companies were actually forced to use storytelling or brand storytelling to focus more on emotional connections with consumers, because the consumers have become more discerning, you know, and wanted more on justice, things like corporate social responsibility, and focusing more on themselves and the customer. So this is a quick history on branding. I want you to know where it started and where we are today. And I'd like to now transition into talking about whole brain thinking. So as we know, we have some healthcare experts and professionals on the line. We have two sides of our brains. Which side of the brain do you think a branding might sit? The right or the left? You can, okay, I see Demita says right. Someone says left. Okay, I want to give someone else another opportunity.
AC said right. Tiana said right.
Okay.
Yolanda said left.
Okay, so we're balanced. Well, let me share this. So right brain thinking is considered to be the intuitive or spontaneous side, really creative, imaginative. People generally lead with the right side of the brain. And the logic, details, and numbers tend to be characterized by the left brain. So what side of the brain do you think branding sits? Well, Yolanda says
it'll be right or right both.
Well, actually, ladies, the answer is not all of you are partially correct, because branding is a whole brain thinking exercise. Yes, you do lead with the right, but it is whole brain thinking. You do need the left. You do need the facts. You do need the consumer insights. You do need to understand your customers. So it is considered to be a whole brain thinking exercise. But you tend to lead with your right, but it is whole brain thinking. So thank you. Thank you for that. Another thing that I like to do before we start really talking about the official 10 steps is to talk about something called brand expression tools. So how many of you generally refer to like logos, your business cards, your websites as your brand? You can, let me see if you can maybe let me know in the chat.
Or raise your hand.
Yeah, or raise your hand. Thank you. Yes, thank you. Casey raised her hand. Thank you. Excuse me. Okay, so that is partially true, but the official way to, and thank you, Barbara, the official way to characterize these are considered to be brand expression tools. So your logo, your symbol, your typeface or your font, your visual identity system, your business card, your name, your business name, your tagline. These are not necessarily, this is not the things that you call your brand, but you call them your brand expression tools because they're manifestations of your brand and they help to create attributes or just words for your brand. So just keep that in mind. You know, branding, a brand really is just the intangible attributes and the tools that you use that many of you have, you usually start developing them as soon as you have a business. These are your brand expression tools and you do need them. So just letting you know what they are. And branding, the act of branding is when you actually use all of these tools to introduce messages to your customers. So again, branding is the act of pulling and using storytelling and story making to draw your customers to what you sell, to what your brand, and to position your brand to meet a customer need. And it's, you know, these tools can be displayed in many different places. So that's a quick drive-by version of strategic branding. Just want to at least share that with you before we get started. So there are 10 steps that I'm going to share with you to create an iconic brand. The first step, and we'll always refer back to a slide like this that's blue. So if you ever wonder where we are, you'll see the number in the upper left-hand corner, and you'll see the actual step in the middle. So the first step is to learn how to appropriately define brand, which is what we did. In order to have an iconic brand, you need to know what it is so that you can make sure that you have one. And then to distinguish between the branding, marketing, and sales. You need to know what you're doing with your brand. So let me help you. I have this schematic that I've had used for many different years. And this is used on large corporate clients, smaller women-owned businesses. It's the same for everyone. So this is a nice visual way to talk about branding versus marketing. It's, if you remember, I said branding is the pull and marketing is the push. So let's unpack this a little bit in a slower pace, because I want you to understand this. Branding is all about the why. It focuses on the why. And when I say the why, I'm referring to your purpose, your why, your reason for being. Now, marketing is focused on the how it will be communicated, how you're going to solve it. And it's actually short term. Branding is something that is long term. You should not be changing your brand, what you mean, what you stand for every year. You can change how you communicate what you stand for, communicate your different business. You can have a different marketing campaign to do that. Branding defines your trajectory and it drives an enduring reputation. And marketing seeks to define tactics. So metrics like driving your sales or periodic sales or click-through rates, if you're doing online marketing, referring to anytime someone clicks onto your ad or your whatnot, your flyer, your digital flyer. This is what marketing is about. Branding is about being. It builds loyalty, advocacy, and what we call brand evangelism, which is the highest form of brand awareness. This is where you want everyone to be. Basically, everyone is talking about your brand for you, and you don't have to do it on your own. Marketing is designed to generate an actual response that can be more accurately quantified. So you're going to have a campaign. You're going to have an email campaign. You're going to look at all of your metrics. How many people opened that campaign? How many leads did you get? How many of those leads do you need to follow up on? That's what marketing is for, and it's very, very important. So it's worth just, you know, I don't mind if you take a screenshot of this slide. I want you to make sure that you can know this as we're going into a deeper space. And the last thing that I'd like to say on the topic is that branding competes on intangible attributes, intangible things that you can't touch. If you're not competing on intangible attributes, what you're selling is a commodity. And then you're going to just have to compete on price. And if that's your strategy, that's okay. But if you want to have a strong brand that, you know, has intangible attributes, you stay at the top in terms of your attributes and how you position yourself. So that's one thing I like to share. That's another thing I like to share. Another thing I like to highlight is the second point I'd like to make is that it's to really focus on authenticity. So number two in creating your iconic brand is to understand the tenets of authenticity so that you can imbue them on a personal and on an organizational or company level. So what do I mean by authenticity? Because I don't want to throw out any terms that might not be understood as it relates to your company. So for a brand, to be considered to be authentic, for a brand to be considered to be authentic, it needs to be perceived as being reliable, respectful, and real. And we generally feel inspired by authentic brands and emotionally invested in their success. We even buy their products, even when there might be more expensive alternatives. And just know that companies perceived to be authentic build what you call brand loyalty, and they tend to be more profitable. So I'm about to share a case study or brand study with you on a company called Farm Girl Flowers. Has anyone ever heard of Farm Girl Flowers? They're based in California. You'll learn about them soon. But I think they're a great example of authenticity. And I'm about to run a two-minute video on Farm Girl Flowers. And I'll just ask if you can hear it. So I'll turn up my volume now. Let's see if you could.
Farm Girl Flowers is an excellent example of an authentic brand with an authentic founder and CEO, Christina Semple, who is dedicated to bootstrapping her floral bouquet business and upending the industry. She went from $411 in the bank to a $23 million flower powerhouse. As reported to Inc., she explained why she made the choice to change her business supply chain model and how it affected her team. One of her key goals was to support local farmers. In 2016, she ran out of her supply of flowers for her business because her suppliers at the time, large farmers in the U.S., refused to sell to her. She was deemed to be removing the middleman and was getting a negative reputation with these suppliers. She acknowledged that she was naive in thinking that she could get them to sell to her. And in 2016, she only received 26% of the confirmed orders from growers. This was an operational nightmare for her because she had built her business on using domestically grown flowers, but she had to face the fact that she would need to import some of her supply. She was hesitant to import flowers specifically because she had received amazing press from various publications and had shared the company mission to help support local agriculture. Christina was very concerned about how her customers and the general public would perceive this shift in supply, so she published a letter to her customers on the Farm Girl Flowers website and explained why she had to make this choice, which would in fact change the company's supply chain model. Fortunately, the response was very positive from her customers, and it actually made Farm Girl Flowers more reliable, respectful, and real. This experience taught Christina that she should continue to be completely transparent with customers, which demonstrates that Farm Girl Flowers is indeed an authentic brand.
Okay. How would you have felt if that was your company? You had built your brand on everything being domestic, American, and you had to start importing some of your products from abroad. How would you feel? Because she really built her brand, you know, on this, and now she had to change that in order to stay afloat.
I think I might feel a little embarrassed, maybe, because, you know, I had stood on this platform and really wanted it to be that way, and it didn't pan out. So I think I might be a little embarrassed.
Yes, that's exactly. She felt that way. And what did she do? She just went and wrote a letter to her customers. And oh, I see, I would have been disappointed because that wasn't what I originally set out to do. Thank you, Summer. Thank you. Is it Barry? Or did I mess it up? Okay. Yeah, exactly. But what did
Casey.
She do?
That was Casey that spoke to you.
Casey, oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Yes, Casey. Oh, I see that Barry's...
I would have feared of being perceived as like wishy-washy, saying or going back on my word. And I would be upset with the farmers. I mean, I would have just been honest and said, these are the guys that don't want to provide. So
right. Yes, thank you. Thank you for all of that. Thank you, Casey Berry. Thank you for all of that. Yeah, exactly. And what she did was brilliant. She was just very honest. She expressed her problem and she shared it with her customers and they still supported her. They didn't go away. And actually, it endeared them to her even more. And when things got better, you know, they stayed with her. And I have had such a positive experience with that brand, with this particular brand, you know, as well, when I sent flowers to a client and I made a mistake and it came to my house. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I wanted it to get there so fast. And they were so accommodating to me. And in the end, I just delivered it myself, but they were willing to go the extra mile. And that, you know, endeared me to them. Okay, Barbara, her transparency and vulnerability made her seem more authentic and real. Yes, yes, it did. Excellent. Thank you. And so, you know, and this is applicable. Her actions are applicable to any business. You know, you will need to find the way to do that. But the point is to make sure that you are being authentic. Thank you so much for your participation. The third step in creating an iconic brand involves determining your brand attributes. So your functional and your emotional attributes. So determine the ones that you desire, at least know what they are. So let's get into this. So what are these attributes that I keep talking about? So the brand attributes are either your functional or your emotional associations that, that are really assigned to your brand by your customers and your prospects. Really, you know, your customers really define your attributes, but you can at least have an idea as to what you want people to say about your business. So functional associations involve anything that's tangible, any physical or technical capability that demonstrates how your product or how your service performs. So let's take an example. If we talk about Chanel, the woman's fashion brand, something functional will be, it has a perfect fit. It has good quality. That will be Chanel. An emotional association, on the other hand, something that's cerebral. It's not rational, it's irrational, and it might trigger feelings like nostalgia, love, or imaginations. So if I say something, you know, like, you know, classy and elegant and couture and all of those types of things, maybe even French, the Chanel brand might come to mind. But again, if you see on the left, you know, your brand has functional associations. Basically, whatever you sell has to work. So if you're selling, let's see, I remember that someone has an etiquette service. I think my Mrs. Monica Lewis is a school of etiquette. So I'm sure that if I attend her school, I will learn my settings. I will learn how to have good posture. I probably will learn how to walk with something on my head. I will learn to, you know, to not, probably not use filler. She will teach me things, right? So those are the functional things. But then it's the how she does it. Those other, you know, emotional, you know, attributes. Those are that's where branding sits in. So had I known your companies, I would have used examples using your companies, but I didn't know. But it's okay. What I'd like to do is have a quick exercise and look at four different brands. Really, hopefully within the next 2 minutes. And so, what comes to mind when you see these two brands? We have Apple on the left, we have Android on the right, and you know, Android is the catch-all for Google, Samsung, and this is, I'm really focusing on the cell phone category. So functionally, I think we should start out by saying, what do phones do, the smartphones do for both? You could just...
They have updates.
They make updates, okay. What else do both of the phones do? I mean, do you make calls with them?
Communication, text.
Yeah, access to apps.
Yes.
Communicate, yes. Check emails.
So they both can do that. Both brands can do that. Mm-hmm. And you make phone calls.
And you make calls.
Emails. There's a smartphone. You take pictures, right? You both can take pictures.
Video.
Different operating systems. Thank you, Barbara. Exactly. So now on the emotional side, what comes to mind when you think of Apple?
Easy interface, integration, optimized, mm-hmm. more space, yes. functionality, mm-hmm. comfort.
Comfort. Is it prettier? Is it prettier? Is it more luxe?
Yeah, sleeker design. Sleek. Yeah.
What about Android?
For me, updates. It represents a little bit of... nostalgia, because I used to have an Android and now I'm an iPhone user. So some of the things that I liked about Android, I can't do on iPhone. So for me, I feel a little restricted sometimes with mm-hmm. having an iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I used to use an iPhone. I'm a Google Pixel person. I'm, you know, I stand out here. I'm a Lone Ranger, I know. but the interesting, thank you, ladies. But the interesting thing is that you were able to recall all of these things. You know, this wasn't homework. These things, these attributes sat in your head. They sit in your head every day. You have feelings, you have thoughts about, and you most likely, most people who buy into Apple buy into the brand, not just the product. So as different things come out, you're just buying them. You're part of like a revolution, really, a technology revolution, you know, that cuts across age and it's really cool and it's really nice. And so Barbara, what are you saying? Depends on the person. I was an Android user and I switched to Apple and I still prefer ease of use. Well, yes, good. Very good. So yes, but everyone has thoughts on it. So let's take a totally different category. Tesla mm-hmm. versus Toyota.
Revolutionary, innovative, spaceship.
Tesla.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
which brand are you referring to with those?
I think she's talking about Tesla.
Tesla. Okay. Elon Musk. He's a yeah. That's what I think of when I think of Tesla.
Think of Tesla.
I think overpriced and kind of like I don't buy into the hype, I guess. Mm-hmm.
So you're more concerned, discerning, Casey. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. More brands are changing to having electrical cars, though. Mm-hmm. They're getting in the run for it.
Right.
For sure. Right.
Think of a status symbol.
Mm. So what does it say if you drive a Tesla vehicle versus, I don't know if Toyota has a hybrid car. Someone can educate me on that. But what does it
like
say?
Somebody who's on the cutting edge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. An early adopter of technology.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think about the future. I think where will the future look like? This is he's kind of set the tone mm-hmm. of what the future will look like when it comes to cars.
Yeah. And who is the he, Bridget?
Elon Musk.
Oh, Elon Musk.
I just wanted you to say it, that you know who he is.
Yeah.
Elon Musk. Yeah, he set the tone.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like Ford and the horses type of innovation.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And also no one could probably put a name associated with Toyota. I mean, no full name.
You know, like an individual.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. There's no front person for Toyota mm-hmm. at this stage.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So what can someone tell me, can get an idea, what attributes do you think your customers might assign to your brand just off the fly? What attributes do you think? It could be functional and emotional.
Mm. That's why I'm here.
I was
What would you want them? What would you want them to assign to your brand?
My desire would be relatability.
Okay.
Because that's really the basis of everything that I do
mm-hmm.
Is to encourage people. And so I'm encouraging them from a place of I've been in this place or I am in this place. And this is what I'm doing to help, you know, get myself out of it. So that would be my hope.
Relatability. And I would probably say, based on what you said, you do transformation of some sort.
Right. Yes. I was thinking healing. Excellent results.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Excellent results. Who said that? I'm sorry.
That was Barbara.
Barbara. Okay. Okay. Excellent results. Thank you. Yes, exactly. And probably transformation since you're a coach too.
Right.
Some type of transformation. Wonderful. Well, this is a whole section of an online course that I have, but I have to move on. The attributes is something that's very important. Just keep in mind that start thinking about the ones that you want people to have for your brand, okay? I hate to leave you hanging, but I'm looking at the time and I appreciate your engagement on that. So the fourth one, this is a big one, a multi-part one. And so I'll have to probably speed up. So I suggest determining what I call the four P's of branding. The four P's are purpose, prevision, personality, and promise. Purpose, prevision, personality, and promise. So this is like the fourth step. And I'll start with purpose. So purpose has been a hot topic in branding and, you know, organizational development for some time now. And it's actually, and I mentioned it before, it's said to be your bold affirmation or your reason for being. It is your why. It is not your what you do. It is why you do it. It's about building your legacy. It's the lifeblood of your business. It's your why. And it should outlive you. When your business is super successful and someone, or, you know, someone passes it, you pass your business on, they should still be living out that purpose for you. Your vision will change, you know, every couple of years or so, but your purpose should be there. Another way to say this is the way that Simon Sinek says it. He's a noted person in this space. He says this: people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. People don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. How many of you have heard of this, and do you have a thought on it? The fact that people buy your why and not just your what. Meaning they don't just buy what you sell.
I definitely understand. I've never heard it, but I do understand. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of goes back to what I was saying about being relatable. Mm-hmm. Is because I do offer healing. I don't want to just be offering it just because. I want them to know why I'm doing it.
Right, exactly. Well, take note of, thank you. Take note of his name, Simon Sinek. There's a famous YouTube video. I can always share the link afterwards with Shayla, and if she wants to share it, but it's wonderful. And he goes into great detail talking about your why. But the point that I want you to make is that we should all have a why for what we're doing, and that this really creates an iconic brand. So I have just have maybe one trivia question here. What company uses this as their purpose statement to make people happy? What company do you think uses this as its purpose statement to make people happy? That is their purpose. Everything they do is about making people happy. When you come
Disney?
Into yes. Yes, it's Disney. It is Disney. It is Disney. And you know, that is their, you know, and why do I say that, or why do they say that? What have you experienced from this brand?
Joy.
Nostalgia.
Memories, childhood.
Laughter.
Yeah, these are their attributes. And that is what they exist to do. Now, their vision probably will have some financial things associated with it, metrics, but they exist to make people happy. And if you're not happy after watching a Disney movie or going to a park, then they have not delivered on their purpose. So that's something that most people get. So I think that's a catch-all. But every business, all of you should have a purpose. And I know that you all have one. So you just have to work on, you know, understanding what that is and extracting it. So for my company, and I have a brand agency, and the name of the company is Brand Rebirth, and we do consulting and professional development like this, and we sell promotional products. But the core thing that we hold in terms of our purpose is to boldly unleash authenticity in individuals and organizations. That really is it. Like, yes, of course, I need to sell. I need to, you know, generate revenues and whatnot. But I feel that you have to embrace authenticity on an internal level so that it can permeate your strategy, and it will ultimately have a positive impact on your brand. There is a profit is an outcome of authenticity, but you have to have it, you know, when your organization. And so that is the purpose. That's another, you know, example. So moving on to vision or prevision. Now, prevision is basically your strategic and emotionally compelling picture in your mind's eye of what things could be in the days ahead. So I always suggest looking 7 years out when doing your vision statement, because if you do 3 years, you're just really not pushing yourself. But I think 7 years allows you to think bold and big. And so that's something that I always suggest, looking 7 years out when looking at your vision statement. And I have two vision statements that I'd like to share with you. One is on Google and one is on a healthcare company. So that was Google. In the interest of time, we can't discuss it. I will queue up the second one, which is for a different type of company. They are called Quality Dialysis. You might have heard of them. They're based in Houston. It is a woman-owned business with over 70 employees, and her company provides in-home dialysis. And I worked on her vision statement. So it's not, this work is not just for, you know, multi-billion dollar companies. It's also for businesses of all sizes.
We analyzed the purpose and pre-vision portrait processes that Brand Rebirth led Quality Dialysis through in the previous Brand Roots lessons. But where did we land with the Pre-Vision 7.0 statement? To dominate and modernize the face of home dialysis as we quell in-center treatment mindsets.
So in the interest of time, I won't finish showing it, but what does this mean to dominate and modernize the face of home dialysis? Home dialysis, from what I studied and learned, has, you know, just a very mature face. And what this company is doing is going into homes and providing that service and adding a different level of care, a different level of a medical oversight to this. And the whole idea of in-center treatment mindsets is that, you know, you have to go in, you have to sit, but coming home, you're able to continue on with your life in some way. You're able to do other things. You're able to be comfortable. So they really thought about the customer and how they want to change the face of how this industry looks and how they help and care for people. So I'll move on, but this is just I just want to make sure that you have an example. So personality is another P. And when I say personality, the personality, I mean that I'm referring to human characteristics associated with the brand as well. So I'll give you an example, particularly with, some of you might've heard of brand personalities like magician, sage, or not, but these are categories: innocent, the explorer, the lover. But the idea is when you explore the brand personality, you're basically trying to start a relationship with your customers via the brand personality. So you have to think about your brand as having one. So for instance, when you think about Zara, or in Spanish, Zara, the Spanish retailer where you buy clothing, the brand personality for this company could be characterized as trending, exciting, spirited, and daring. You know, this is the personality for Zara. And for the American battery manufacturer called Energizer, their brand personality is characterized by being upbeat. You know, you usually see a real rabbit with a lot of energy running across. It's like their symbol, and that helps you to understand their attributes as well. So that is what that is about. Promise is basically concerned with how you will behave to your customers. And basically, it communicates the key difference your company wants customers to perceive. It helps notify customers of what to expect. And this is really critical. So there's a company called the American Construction Company, Granite Rock. And their promise is total customer satisfaction. Total customer satisfaction equal to or greater than Nordstrom's. So how many of you have ever gone to Nordstrom's and you've experienced great customer service? Hopefully you have. So basically they are patterning their promise after that. Or McDonald's has a promise of to provide simple, easy enjoyment to every customer at every visit. That's their promise. And if they're not doing that, then we have to kind of like, we've called them out on that. The fifth thing is to establish core values. How many of you have values for your company? Thought about them. Okay. This is something that you should definitely have for your company. It's not just for major companies. We all should have values. These are the values for Brand Rebirth. They can be found on the website, but they all have meaning. This is the important thing. They all have meaning. There's another company called Next Trucking. It was founded by Lydia Yan. It's a logistics company. And these are their values: efficiency, collaboration, innovative technology, resilience, and family. And when you create your values, it actually helps you with the whole brand attributes type of thing. But this company is called Next Trucking, and they have a particular logistics platform that uses something called low technologies, and they use smart technology to kind of like get things moving. I'll just say really quickly, it's a woman-owned business based in California called Next. And number six is to develop your brand story. So when developing your brand, you have to have a story. So everything that we're doing will help you do that. But in addition to that, whenever you're developing your story about your brand, think about something that's really interesting so that you can have a personal twist to your story. Make sure that you carry a message that hits an emotional nerve. I also call this a rebirth moment. And a rebirth moment is something that's like an unforgettable experience, something that's happened. And for a brand rebirth, rebirth is about change that leads to improvement for your brand. So whatever that is, if it's Casey's business, it might be healing. You know, if it is Tiana's business, it might be something to do with teaching. But you have to figure out what that rebirth moment is for your customers and weave that into your story. You need to have a strong story. Another point is to use something called design thinking. This is number seven, design thinking, to test, validate, and refine your ideas. Now, design thinking is just a tool. You can Google it. It's out there for everyone. You know, many people use it for many different reasons, but it's a tool that's really useful for in being innovative. And all of you at some point will offer something new within your business. You might offer a new product, a new service. And the big thing about design thinking is that it involves empathy, listening to your customers. And it involves empathy, empathizing with your target audience in some way. Now, I don't want you to get caught up in this schematic. Just remember that this approach focuses on the person and the experience and not the process. So when you're designing your brand, think about your customers, study them, develop avatars, develop personas, think about what you're doing, observe and listen to what your customers know, what problem you're solving, you know, understand how what you create is actually solving a problem. And then if you are like, let's say you're coming up with a new service right now or a new business, this is a great time to think about observing and listening, making sure that you're listening to your customers, you're actually defining a real problem, and then think of ways to solve it. And then here with this prototype business here, this just means make sure you're doing your research, make sure that you're really, really building something that you can test. And this is an iterative process. You'll know when to do this, but a good brand, an effective way to do this is really, really to focus on the customer. So you can always Google design thinking. Number eight is that, let's say, you know, you have a company where you have employees. When you're thinking about launching your brand and your ideas, always think internally first, like if you have a team, and then focus on going external. The idea is that build your evangelism internally. If you don't have a team and you have a board, if you have advisors, get buy-in, make sure, test your ideas, use that design thinking approach, test your ideas, test your brand story, test your purpose, test your prevision, test your attributes, but make sure that you have some support. You have people who want to speak about your brand. You want to create these brand evangelists. Now, I know that someone mentioned social, and social is a totally different, a full workshop. But what I can say is that once you've built this brand using the steps that I shared with you, make sure that you're promoting it on well-researched channels. You do not have to pursue all social channels. As you know, there's Google, there's LinkedIn, there's Facebook. You know, on LinkedIn alone, there are over 675 million professionals. And, you know, all of these channels, you know, have different purposes, but you have to understand your industry to determine which channel is best for you. Like, you know, this Google channel here is really important. It isn't necessarily social media, but, you know, having a Google business being listed because this helps with what you call search engine optimization. When people basically enter in your company's name, what do they see? What do they find? These are things that will help to, you know, being searchable also helps to grow your brand. Now, in terms of different channels, there are so many ways to market your brand. But the important thing here is to understand your customers and where they are before, you know, really expending a lot of efforts on it. Now, video, I would say we all could use video. And there are different ways that you can do video on your own, or you can hire agencies, you know, professionals to help you with your videos, you know. But this is actually, you know, one of the most effective ways to use to in terms of channel marketing. Speaking on webinars, podcasts, these are great ways to get your thought leadership out. When I mentioned search engine optimization on this previous slide here for Google, this is what this organic search can mean. But my point is that there are so many different ways to communicate and promote what you do, but you have to determine what is best for you based on where your customers are. And you have to study your customers or your future customers. That's what I can say, you know, about this. And it could be that you only focus on Facebook for your company, or you only focus on Instagram, depending on what you do. But whatever you do, make sure that you study that channel and you also determine the return on investment for your efforts. You know, so you need to have some metrics associated with what you do. Don't just blindly just participate on all the channels, because I'm sure you don't have the bandwidth for that. So just be very intentional about that. And I would say that the final step in creating iconic brand is doing what you're doing today. Invest in your strategic brand learning. Find opportunities like this through the Women's Business Center, through the Greater Houston Women's Chamber of Commerce. If you're looking for more, you know, I obviously do more, but the important point is continue to do this. Find the right thought leaders to help you. Do not waste time on thinking that you can do everything yourself, because none of us can. You do what you do well, and be really wise about, you know, your time. So if you're currently marketing your brand and you haven't taken these strategic steps, you can do it now. You can do it now. And the thing is you can be successful with your business for a long time, but most businesses still have to come back to the basics. And I've experienced that. And these basics are what I shared with you today. And what I'd like to also share is that something, you know, I know we all must know who Maya Angelou was. She was such an amazing person. And I love, love, love this quote from her. She said, if you're always trying to be normal, you will never know how amazing you can be. So if it's okay to be a little irrational from a branding standpoint, it's okay to think outside of the box. And it's really okay to think about your customers. And it's really important to be purpose-driven. It's important to understand your why, because if you're able to communicate that through everything you do and weave that into your story, your customers will be drawn to you. They will, you know, it will create this magnetic pull with branding. And that's really, really where you want to be. So I hope that this was helpful, because I want to end on time and be respectful of your time. I do have a gift for you. If you'd like to do a little more reading, I did create an ebook on the 4 hacks to rebirth your brand. And I basically go through these 4 P's of branding in a slower pace. So if you're interested in it, you could just definitely locate it on brand-rebirth.com, and you can go to ebook, or I can find the link and get it to you really quickly. But
can you type it in the chat, Tanika?
Yes, I'll do that as when you start talking to Shayla.
In the chat for sure. Oh,
no. Okay, I'll do that. Phenomenal.
Right, leave this slide up. Everyone, please follow Tanika. This was
get this link for you.
This was amazing information, and I wish we could stay on longer. We probably need to have a part 2 of this, because it was so much that we could have drilled down on in those 10 steps. But most importantly, the quote that Tanika left us with Maya Angelou, is something that was a really great way to end this session. Also, she gave us a lot of things to think about for all of us that's on the call. What is your story? So start thinking about what your story is. Think about the attributes you want for your brand. Focus on those 4 P's. Michaela said, yes, part 2, please. Okay. And Barry had to sign off right at one, but she sent me a note to tell me to let you know, thank you so much. She really loved your energy and she appreciated the presentation.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, this was amazing. And Tanika, we cannot thank you enough. And for those of you who participated on the line, Tiana said part two. Barbara votes for part two. Damita and Gayla, please connect on the 12 days of Christmas. Gayla, please get the information in the chat if you're watching it, please. But everyone, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate your time. I would really love for you to stay connected with us. Visit our website, which is ghwcc.org. Check out our upcoming events. We have these educational and business workshops every single week. They're on Mondays and Thursdays, always during lunchtime from 12 to 1. Sign up for our newsletter so that you can keep abreast of all of the events that are coming up. We email them out every single week. You can go to our website, ghwcc.org, and sign up for our newsletter.
Thank you for watching the Global Business Women's Pod, brought to you by the Greater Houston Women's Chamber of Commerce. We cannot wait to see you next Thursday at 6 p.m. And remember, you can always find us at ghwcc.org.